We do lots of technical assistance, capacity building, training, educational activities for practitioners. We are accredited as a university. And so we can offer from one-day seminars to 2 weeks workshops up to academic degree programs. We started the first international master's course in anti-corruption studies in 2012. And just this week, these academic degree programs, so it's six class coming together here in Vienna. By the end of the day, it's about empowerment. It's about empowerment for practitioners, for the ones that are in the arena, to give them the tools, to give them the toolkits also, to translate the big conventions, to translate national law into means and into deeds that they can work with on a daily basis.
You said at the conference that successful anti-corruption efforts rely on international cooperation, not only in spirit and with warm words, but through practical steps and concrete deeds. What sort of practical steps were you calling for?
We have been seeing in anti-corruption over the last 20, 25 years some trends. The first trend was more or less the de-tabuization of the topic. That started in the mid-70s, some would call it, by the mid-90s. The next trend was calling for more criminal law. The next trend was prevention, and then we saw additional trends drawing the nexus between corruption and human rights, drawing the nexus between corruption and gender issues, etc., corruption and development, of course. What I would like to argue is that we need to go the comprehensive way. Yes, criminal law implementation is important. Provisions in criminal law are important, but at the same time, what we also need to see is prevention work, educational work, and international cooperation. Most of at least the big corruption cases are of transnational nature. Recall just a few days ago the detection of the so-called Paradise Papers. Recall the Panama Papers. Recall the so-called car wash case, the Odebrecht case in Latin America. All those cases involve transnational activities, transnational criminal activities, the laundering of money, etc., etc. So if we do not internationally cooperate, there is just no way of succeeding.
How does combating corruption stack up against battling other issues like climate change, refugee crises, for example? Why is this so important?
I would argue that none of the 17 SDGs can be properly implemented if not at the same time we also address the issue of corruption. In goal 16, target 5, it's even explicitly mentioned that we are all called to substantively reduce corruption and bribery in all their forms. But then again, at the same time, gender equality is not going to happen if we do not address corruption at the same time. Fair market conditions is not going to happen. All the other SDGs as well are not to be implemented if corruption is not also being taken care of. So I think it's safe to argue that the smart way towards safeguarding human rights, the smart way towards a sustainable future development is by empowering anti-corruption professionals and by addressing corruption as one of the biggest and most challenging challenges that we have. We are happy to be a great promoter of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption and also of UNODC's efforts in that context. And we look forward to continuing these joint efforts as we are all, I think, fighting for a better, fairer world.